You should come down here and live in Miami. Mike's going up in a second. People just speak to you in Spanish. If you look anything close to somebody who should speak Spanish, you just get spoken Spanish to.
100%.
Gonzalo Levitard has only spoken Spanish to me. I mean, for the record, like, I haven't had the heart to correct him. I just try to speak bad Spanish in response. It's a very
short... Hit him with gringo Spanish, and then they walk away. Is that what you do? Hola, como estes? Muy bien, ¿y tú?
And they're just so disappointed in you. They just kind of roll their eyes. They don't even continue the conversation. They're like, wow, letdown.
You want me to try and roll this R? I'm not rolling this R. This R
is staying very... Español.
This R is remaining very stationary. For everyone.
I remember when I went to Puerto Rico one time to cover a Heat preseason game, I was in a cab. And for some reason, I just pretended not to understand Spanish at all because I just didn't want to deal with my broken Spanish and have him look so disappointed at me. And, you know, it worked because forced him to speak a little bit of English.
So did you ever tell Jermaine O'Neal, Izzy, that you're not actually, a light-skinned black person? Or
no, he wasn't alone. Caron Butler thought the same thing. And I only found out just because PR guys said they were asking about me, and that's how they asked about me. And I was like, wow, the name didn't give it away. Okay.
Oh, I love that. You could be a family member of mine, and we black, so I could see it.
Welcome.
I would love to.
Welcome to Debatable, a fake television show where we talk about, well, very important matters, but debate nothing, ultimately. Happy New Year to Al Duncan, and not Happy New Year to Israel Gutierrez, who is already mad that I've begun the show this way. Is that correct, Izzy?
100%, yes. Yeah. It's Wednesday, man. It's just Wednesday. It is Wednesday, right?
It is, in fact, Wednesday.
Yeah, can confirm. Okay, good.
Alabaster, where are you on the Happy New Year? When can we stop or start saying that?
You know, I'm pretty tepid on all of it. I just like pleasantries and things to avoid Stop and Chat. So if you can do a walk by Happy New Year rather than actually stopping and chatting, I'm pro that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
yeah,
a
but
good,
isn't
it's
Happy
a good
New Year
go-to.
The beginning of awful small talk though? Like, doesn't that just set you up for, you know, there's going to be no depth in this conversation because I haven't talked to this person in several days and they just want to say this random, you know, greeting to me that was last week.
Yeah, that's the point, though. You just, like, get in and out. Like, right,
exactly.
Like, right now, but before New Year's and the holidays, my go-to with the security guy is, oh, man, it's really getting cold out there, you know? And then he's like, yep, it sure is. And then we just kept doing that for a couple of months. Then it became, you know, Happy Thanksgiving, and then Happy Holidays, then Merry Christmas, and now it's Happy New Year. So, yeah, in the next small talk, I'm sure it'll be something about, can't wait
be
for the
off
spring
just
to
like...
get here.
Just offer, like, small pieces of information into your life. Like, just walk by and be like, you know, I really like to pour gravy on every sandwich that I make. And then just walk away. Like, that's at least something he can sort of digest, no pun intended. Just kind of like, oh, okay, well, maybe that's something I want to do. Or maybe that's a small nugget that I want to know about Miss Duncan. Like, I think that's perfectly reasonable. A lot more reasonable than just some nicety.
See, I'm just big on pointing ever more aggressively. Like, I'm walking by you, I'm pointing, acknowledging, nodding. You know that I see you, I'm here for you.
Mm-hmm.
And none of us want to go beyond Happy New Year, but I do feel like that's required for, like, the first week of January, you barbarian.
Yeah.
Why not just stop at Monday? Like, it's Monday, it's been, that's the third, it's been 3 days, it's the start of the week. Like, why are we in the middle of the week saying this again?
No, because for the first week of January, every time you see someone that you haven't seen, like, I don't need to wish y'all a Happy New Year again, but I haven't seen you. So at least for the first week, every time I see someone new, I get to say Happy New Year.
Probably haven't seen that person since Thanksgiving either, but you're not wishing them that.
It is a one and done situation, though. If you say it twice to the same person, it's
overkill. Yeah. And then they know you have nothing to talk to them about.
Exactly right. Speaking of having nothing to talk
about.
Dangerous game. Alabaster, what is this card that you put down that you want us to abide by?
New Year, same Debatable. Mm. We had some tech issues, and the initial link that you guys tweeted out is no longer active. So we need you to tweet out the new link.
Okay, I don't know which one
it.
The new one
is.
Is
it the one that you just 2 minutes ago? Oh, I see our face, so I think it's this one. Retweet.
Yep.
Cool.
Seem to have perfected regular television. Damn. Can't perfect the little tiny television in my hand. Why?
Okay, here
we
are.
We're good.
Yep, at Debatable. By the way, we're available as a podcast if you can't watch us here live, where we are prone
which most
to,
people can't, apparently.
Which we can't for, actual reasons.
Is anyone
beyond your
watching?
Control. We'll find out. Oh, by the way, that reminds me also, if you're watching and you want to send us tweets, or edit us into various famous historical scenes that we can use as memes, yeah, we would appreciate that, because that will give us lily pads to keep this conversation going.
We're Pi, by the way. P-I-E. Pi. That's the only contribution.
Oh,
I have so
there it is. I was so confused. I was like, what the hell are you talking about, Izzy? And then I realized what year we are. Pi. Aww.
Yeah.
What's your favorite pie? Are you guys pie guys?
Blueberry.
Okay.
Sweet potato pie is way ahead of pumpkin pie. I don't know if I have a favorite, but I definitely like sweet potato over pumpkin. I decided that this past Thanksgiving.
Wow, what are you guys, anti-American? Clearly the answer is apple pie.
The only answer.
Blueberry? Who the hell eats blueberry pie? Pablo, that's made up. No one ever eats blueberry. Who ever spends that much time macerating blueberries in order to make a blueberry pie? What a joke.
I am a chronic macerator of blueberries. Oh, God. I apologize for nothing.
Okay. I'm out. I'm done.
Thank you for going ISO on that, by the way. Okay. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Right at the end. Just Thank linger you. There, Bill.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Tilt my head. Yeah.
You guys ready to talk
some sports?
The image
of him macerating blueberries.
Okay.
Yeah.
First topic.
Yeah, fine.
Do you see Jim Harbaugh bailing on Michigan to return to the NFL?
Oh, God.
So it's heady times for Jim Harbaugh, right? Because a year ago this week, he had just signed this new deal with University of Michigan, his beloved home, basically, as he's referred to it over and over again. But he had taken about a 50% pay cut in base salary because if you hadn't been paying attention, Jim Harbaugh was bad at coaching the Michigan football team, essentially, for years. And now, this week, a year later, it seems like, wait a minute, everything has changed for Jim Harbaugh. He is in demand. He has obviously lost. Al can tell us about that. He lost in the college football playoff. Yep, there's that barking noise. But also, he beat, you know, Ohio State. Like, he did the thing that no one said he could do. And so now come the whispers. Is he going to leave for the NFL? And my general supposition when I give you facts that start with he took a 50% pay cut and now there is this new market that is interested in his services, I'm inclined to think that this is all just a way to make more of that money back. But I'm curious how cynical you guys are about this.
Yeah, Elle, you were barking, so clearly you must
fair,
go first on this
fair.
Subject.
Yeah, I mean, this feels like that is a really good point, Pablo. Potentially, this is just him sort of, you know, building the leverage game and saying, like, he will leave, and he's caught a little bit of fire. And I just think, wow, Michigan's got to feel really, really unhappy about that because he has underperformed. They paid that man so much money right away. They
yes.
bought in to his crazy antics. Like, right away, they made him like a tenured coach when he had absolutely no resume at Michigan to prove that otherwise, right? They took what they saw at Stanford. They took what they saw in San Francisco. And I thought, we are so lucky to have this Harbaugh name. And he alone is going to make Michigan relevant. He alone is going to be able to get these big name recruits. And his tactics at first were sort of weird and bizarre, but people talked about them and his khakis became a thing. And then we started to realize after a few years, you know, we're only ever talking about like Jim Harbaugh, not actually any of the product that he's putting out there on the field. He completely underperformed. And I feel like suddenly, when he took a pay cut that everyone knew he should have taken, right? Honestly, most people were calling for his job. So the idea that
yep.
he got to keep it by taking this pay cut, and then to think that in 1 year, yes, you finally beat Ohio State, and then you have a lesser opponent in the Big Ten championship, and you finally win the Big Ten, and then you finally make it to the CFP, right? Finally. And then you get absolutely embarrassed. And I think what Jim Harbaugh's realizing right now is that this is as good as it's ever going to get for him at Michigan, right? Like he, if you're to believe the rumors, always wanted to go back to the NFL. And so for him, it's like, let me strike while the iron's hot. They can never say I didn't beat Ohio State. They can never say I didn't get this team to the postseason. I've done both of those things. But also, if me putting this team in the postseason every year just to face an SEC team that is overmatched is what is going to happen for me in the future, I'm going to bounce and go back to the NFL. I see why he's doing it, but if you're Michigan, you are so disgusted by Harbaugh doing something like this after the blind loyalty you've shown him for the better part of a decade.
You know what's crazy to me? Like, off the top of your head, without looking down at a card, promise me. How long has he been at Michigan?
Oh, it's like almost a decade, right?
Yeah, like 8 years or something?
7 years.
7 years.
Four 10-win seasons, 7 years.
Yeah. It feels like so much longer than that. It feels like he's been a disappointment there for like a decade plus, and now he's sort of waking up and coming out and like looking for this other job, which I don't blame him, because it feels like we've been doing nothing but beating up on him for not being able to beat Ohio State, not being able to make it to the national semifinal. And now when you do, you get roasted when you get there. But I'm also wondering, like, what is the grand appeal of Jim Harbaugh? Like, I remember, you know, Stephen Ross from the Dolphins was tripping over himself trying to hire him initially out of Michigan. And I'm just trying to figure out what the large appeal is. Because, yes, like, he did take San Francisco to a Super Bowl. At Michigan, what has he done to make you think he's going to come to the NFL and revamp an organization? Is it offensive or defensive ingenuity? Is this, like, this, you know, brain for football that we haven't seen? Not really. You would think that, you know, having Michigan and being able to get whatever recruits you want and shape the team however you want, if you're really innovative, you probably wouldn't be like this rushing team that's like, you know, 3 yards in a cloud of dust and isn't going to be able to compete with these, you know, high power offenses with no quarterback. So, I mean, I understand he took the Niners to that Super Bowl. He has won, but no matter where he's been, he hasn't won enough. Like, he hasn't won enough to say, okay, this guy's guaranteeing me success at the, you know, Super Bowl level if you're the NFL. And the longer you stay in college, the more sort of disconnected you are to the NFL. And the longer there are more, or the more often there are Urban Meyer stinking up the NFL, the worse it's going to look for college coaches going to the NFL. So I look at Jim Harbaugh and I'm just like, wow, like, you're offended that all those coaches that we showed earlier got paid more than you, and that's fine. But what have you really done?
Well, look, there are the questions of, like, okay, what has he really done? And Alabaster is repeatedly jabbing his alabaster finger at the fact that, yes, he went 44-19-1 in San Francisco, went to the Super Bowl in 2012, three straight NFC title games. All of that is so. But we've now analyzed this question from, okay, how should Michigan feel about this? How should these prospective NFL teams feel about hiring him? What about if you're Jim Harbaugh, like, himself? Because for me, what I would warn him, and I assume this is legitimately a thing that he has thought very long and hard about already, like, this is kind of your dream job, and it's kind of, if you can coast on the credit that you've built this season, like, did you want to be the tenured professor who gets to retire and do this forever and be beloved as that guy in Ann Arbor, right? Like, being an NFL head coach seems so miserable. And if you're a college coach where they are in and you're one of them and you can do the thing where you light your pants on fire accidentally, which is literally a thing that happened to him on a sideline, if you're the type of guy who will smear your player's blood on your own face, I feel like all of that, by the way, also a thing he did in reality, that's all stuff that being a weirdo college coach, I think, is far more amenable to than being an NFL coach who is going to be, yes, trying to catch up with the game that I think has evolved since you left.
It's ego.
Don't you think that's been sucked out of him a little bit, though? Like, over the last several years, like, it hasn't really been that version of Jim Harbaugh. Maybe it's just, you know, he needs a new place.
He's not even wearing khakis anymore.
I know.
That's what I mean. Like, it feels like he had this sort of, like, midlife coaching crisis and then finally got the thing that he'd been trying to do. He won the big one. He beat Ohio State. He finally has that signature win on his resume. And now he wants out, reportedly. And Al, you were saying it's ego. Maybe this is a thing that Nick Saban fell prey to that ultimately brought him back, by the way, to college on the back end of that whole Miami Dolphins experience.
Exactly. But that's the point, though, right? Is that, like, okay, Harbaugh's never going to be Nick Saban or even Urban Meyer at the college level, but he could get something over on them. He could prove yet again that he could be successful at the NFL level, because at this point, going from Stanford, then to the Niners, then back to college, when you think of successful runs, right, from college coaches going to the pros, he falls on that list right now. He does. Most people would tell you that, right? Along with Pete Carroll. Like, so I think for him, it's about saying, yes, I can do this here in Michigan. I can finally win the game, even though, good God, it took 7 years. 7 years for you to beat your rival. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how we're applauding that, but it's fine. It finally happened, and it is what it is. It is what it is, right? As I stare down Kirby Smart yet again, potentially losing to Nick Saban.
That's right.
I just think that there's this idea that, like, he'd be able to get something over on other people, and he'd have something that Nick Saban never had or any of these other big names ever had, and that is the ability to navigate at a successful place going to the NFL as well. It just feels like a very Harbaugh move.
Doesn't it feel like there's less competition in the NFL? Like, literally, less competition for players. You have one of, what, 30, 32? And so as opposed to all these colleges or what have you that are going after these same guys, and you kind of know, it's not guessing, you kind of know who's going to be good and who's going to work in your organization. Like, if I'm Jim Harbaugh, I think the NFL is by far the more enticing job for me. You know, obviously played there, obviously got to a Super Bowl there, want to finish the job there, and like, you look around and all these guys, you know, Brian Kelly getting lauded and, you know, getting pulled away. And he's probably looking at him like, I'm better than that guy. I've got a better track record than that guy. Why aren't I getting tugged away from all the, you know what, forget college. I'm going back to the pros. And I think the Raiders is a great spot for him, right? They seem to be good with having sort of the coach be the centerpiece, right? The center ring of the circus there, and just be and let him run things. And so, yeah, I think he could absolutely succeed there and just be quirky and different in Las Vegas. And you know, they seem to have a ready-made team with a few, you know, improvements here and there to be able to make a playoff run. So I can definitely see him doing it. And if it's me, I make that move by far, because outside of winning a national championship for Michigan, which seems like it's going to be harder to do, there's really not a whole lot he can sort of cleanse his resume with at Michigan.
So I should clarify something. I talked about how the college job can be a tenured professorship, to use L's terminology from the top of the segment. If he's going to be the coach of the Raiders, and if Mark Davis, who he had worked with, Al Bassi had a card there, there's some background, right, between Harbaugh and the Raiders. If there is that relationship, because he began coaching there in 2003, is friends with Mark Davis. If Mark Davis is still handing out 10-year contracts for $100 million, like the most tenured coaching job that exists in like coaching history, as John Gruden got, if you can get that one specifically, yes, the math on this does change for me. I would want that job in specific.
Do you trust him to navigate the quarterback position? Because you're talking about a Raiders team that, like, maybe isn't sold on Derek Carr, right? Like, maybe needs to look elsewhere, right? Which is, it seems crazy. But listen, at the end of the day, you could see some other teams that feel like they're in even better positions make a run for a Derek Carr, right? If Aaron Rodgers decides that he's going to leave, or if Denver, you know, decides that they're not going to re-sign either one of the quarterbacks they currently have. I just wonder if we feel good about Jim Harbaugh navigating the quarterback situation. It worked out okay at Stanford, right, when he ended up going with Andrew Luck. That worked out okay. Worked out okay for him with the Niners, right, with Colin Kaepernick. Didn't work out so well for him in Michigan. He really could never solve that sort of missing link. So I'm wondering, do we feel good about Jim Harbaugh sort of stepping into a situation where it's already a well-oiled machine, but they just need a little bit more leadership, like a Denver, right? Or do we see him needing to land on a team like the Raiders?
Stop selling Denver there.
Well, no, I don't want
we know where your
That's
allegiance
the point.
Is
I'm
lie.
Trying to prepare myself for the announcement that Jim Harbaugh's going to come to Denver. Oh, God. And then what would I do?
The thing about Harbaugh, though, and, like, you know, having to find players, it is a, like, I thought this was the guy. I mean, Jim Harbaugh, part of his legend is that he literally had sleepovers with recruits in a non-creepy way somehow. Like, he managed to thread that needle where, like, we were like, oh, that's endearing. Where he'd actually, like, you know, have pajama parties with the guys he was recruiting.
Right, that's, hang out,
I mean,
the tree.
Right, like, I don't know. I thought you liked that, dude. I mean, that's the kind of weirdness that, yeah, I don't know what the NFL equivalent is going to be, you know? And maybe, yeah, maybe
Michigan and the Big Ten in general, outside of maybe Ohio State, the Big Ten and Michigan, it's just a tough sell for a kid, especially unless you're just from there already. To me, Michigan would seem like a difficult sell, given all the options that you have, given the lack of recent history.
Come on.
Yeah, but there's a lot of amazing stadiums you can play in. Playing
so
LSU, playing the Swamp, playing what's the USC? Where do they have that one over there? The Rose Bowl.
Yes,
they're all Coliseum. Great stadiums. Coliseum, thank you.
What's that one thing they got over there? That Coliseum there.
Alabaster. I think we've solved Jim Harbaugh's dilemma.
All right, let's go on to another mercurial quarterback. What do you make of Aaron Rodgers' comments implying that his vaccination status could cost him the MVP?
Okay, so we know that...
Strawman.
This is so exhausting. I'm already exhausted by this whole conversation, by the way. But basically, Aaron Rodgers and Pat McAfee on Pat McAfee's show had presaged that he may not win the MVP because of all the vax stuff. You know, he got immunized, not vaccinated. Blah, 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 blah. Right, that whole thing. Okay. What we now know as of yesterday is that there is at least one voter who has an MVP vote. There are 50 voters. There is one voter who has said that he is not going to vote for Aaron Rodgers. And it's not because of the vax stuff in specific. It's because of the offseason stuff before the season even began that established him as a preeminent, yes, let's quote it here, the biggest jerk in the league and, quote unquote, a bad guy. This is one MVP voter on Chicago on the radio talking to Danny Parkins about that. And so Hob Arkush, the voter, says that, yes, Rodgers carried himself in a way that's inappropriate. I think he's a bad guy. I don't think a bad guy can be the most valuable guy at the same time. So all of this just to say that I believe Aaron Rodgers is the MVP. Where are we on this? Because I believe that he is the MVP, and he is simultaneously, like, a subpar guy. I think those two things can be held at the same time as thoughts.
They can't, no. Because here's the thing, though. Pablo and Izzy, he's not for Man of the Year. I would agree with you there, right? Like, Man of the Year is Man of the Year. It's like someone who is in their community and who is an upstanding, the person that you would put before all else to represent your league and brand. That's not what this is about. Like, everybody knows Aaron Rodgers is kind of an ass. Like, it's, you know, even before all of the stuff this year and the lying about being vaccinated and, you know, all of a sudden he's existential and he's well more evolved than the rest of us. Like, we all sort of knew he wasn't like a super likable guy, but the point of the matter is he's the most valuable player in the NFL. It can't come down to this, you guys. It can't come down to this. It can't. Yeah. Like, it's
we
not
have
about
debates all the time. We have debates all the time about what most valuable means, right? The one word that we do not debate is player. It's just because he's a player, right? It's not about the type of person he is. It's just the player. And on the field, this player has been the most consistent, best player in the league, carrying his team to the record that it has now. I should have started with a standing ovation for Hub, by the way, because, I mean, I don't care if he's wrong. That's a heck of a move there to just go out and tell everybody, hey, I don't like this guy,
well,
so he's not getting my vote.
So this is where I think we can advance the discussion to the next stage. I think we've established that we all agree Aaron Rodgers should win the MVP, yes, but also has various character concerns, to borrow another cliche from sports talk. This is not a cancellation, right? If Aaron Rodgers does not win MVP, he did not get entombed in a cancel culture casket, right? What this is, even if you disagree with Hub, as we all do clearly, what this is criticism. It is not cancellation. You can hate a movie. You can think this movie is not best picture. You can think this screenplay is terrible, but you're not canceling the movie. So what I'm exhausted by most of all, of course, is that this is only going to feed into the idea of Aaron Rodgers as professional football's preeminent enlightened victim. And
Yes. It's insane. Like, the idea that you can't criticize a quarterback for some of just his intelligence or some of his opinions, like, it's ridiculous. Like, I laughed and laughed and laughed when Jared Goff didn't know what side of the world the sun comes up on Hard Knocks. Made hilarious. Could criticize him all day for that, right? You dummy. And you can't say that to Aaron Rodgers because he pretends to be the opposite of that, because he's not the football meathead jock or pretends to not be that guy. It's like you're just putting yourself out there and setting yourself up for all of this. Whatever criticism that comes with it, that's fine. We're not criticizing your football game to go by when it comes to stuff like this. But if you don't want to listen to us, if you don't want to be criticized, then don't throw yourself out there that much and play the victim. It's infuriating. And it's one of those things where it's like, I still want to watch him play football. I don't care how much of a jerk he is, but I don't want to hear him on any shows.
Thank
and I've
you.
Never tuned into the Pat McAfee show to listen to him. I don't care what he has to say about any of this stuff. I don't care what lame books are on his shelf that, you know, probably feed into a lot of this nonsense. It's just, he's not my type of guy. That's
yeah.
it. But as a football player, okay, he's probably the best guy. I want to see it every single
week. It's such a preemptive strike, being like, certain statuses might come into play. He's 100% trying to get everyone riled back up in the same way they did before. When people said, and I was the first one to sit on TV and go like, no, it's not good enough for you to go like, oh, well, I said this and you all took it a certain way and again, play the victim, which he does quite a bit. I sat there and said, like, you need to have some level of accountability. You lied. You misled and you lied. And that's not fair, and that's wrong. No one said cancel Aaron Rodgers. No one said strip him of his right to play in the NFL. It's such an absolute joke,
yes,
this idea that because we criticize you or because people ask for accountability or for you to have, God forbid, some contrition, suddenly you're being canceled. There isn't a single person that has done anything that I can think of late that have not at some point gotten another opportunity. Cancel culture boogeyman talk.
He's in your face every day with State Farm.
Correct. Like, it's every all day. Dog whistling. And Aaron Rodgers, like, new, you know, act where he's, like, cosplaying, like, me in college, where I also discovered kombucha and started reading Friedrich Nietzsche. Like, we get it, dude. You're existential. You're more enlightened than the rest of us. You're just more evolved, and you're all about free thinking. It's the same crap Kanye hits us with all the time. Just because I choose to get vaccinated and not lie and in general sort of not be a deplorable person and also just rely on the science that I know or the science that I don't know doesn't make me less enlightened than you, Aaron Rodgers. And conversely, just because you decide not to doesn't make you more enlightened. And this idea he's sitting on this pulpit and sort of looking down on us because we just don't get it, that's the most annoying part of all of this.
Yeah, like, what does cancellation mean is always the question that I return to, right? And if it mostly means, and it should mostly mean this, right, that you lose the platform, you are not able to appear and use your voice in, I don't know, popular settings, like, clearly that isn't happening. And even if he were to lose the MVP award, right, like, that would still not be cancellation. That would just mean that you are like a lot of other athletes throughout history, and we go through this with the Baseball Hall of Fame every year.
You got
a lot of people, exactly. They make decisions not about how good an athlete you are, which, again, we think they should do. That's how we would all vote if we had these powers. But it just means that, hey, the way you're living your life has led lots of people to dislike you. They have criticisms of you. That does not mean you have been canceled. Barry Bonds, like, wasn't canceled. Barry Bonds has been obviously criticized, obviously shut out of the Hall of Fame so far. I would not call that a societal cancellation. Not when he is also, you know, I mean, this is now getting into a far afield conversation, but the dude got a job for a baseball team with the Miami Marlins, right? He's out there. Cancellation needs to be a word that we deploy more strategically, and we deploy it all the time.
Correct.
You know who else has been criticized despite keeping things close to the vest primarily throughout his career is Tom Brady. There's been a couple of things he's been criticized, whether it be somebody he supports, whether it be somebody he follows, whether it be, you know, the TB12 method and all that stuff. If Aaron Rodgers doesn't win the MVP, it's going to be Tom Brady. And, you know, so it doesn't really matter what we think of them and who's going to be criticized or what have you. And but, yeah, the Hall of Fame conversation is probably the best example of that, right? Like, you play your whole career, you think you're going to be that person, and now for the rest of time, or at least for the rest of your life, you're probably not going to be that person ever. And so that's the greatest version of that. Missing out on one MVP, not going to be the end of the world. You know what, Hub? I think you should convince more people not to vote for him. I don't have a vote, so.
Can we just advocate for just approaching things with nuance? Because there is no just, like, right or wrong way to treat everything. People like Harvey Weinstein should be canceled and has been, right? He is a disgusting sexual predator.
Yes, the ultimate, like, cancellation.
Correct.
Yes.
Like, that is the ultimate cancellation. And I'm sorry, like, if you're racist and you're caught and you lose your job, you should. Like, you should. You shouldn't be a judge that gets to use racist language and then keep your job. That's very different, though, than saying Aaron Rodgers is kind of a sucky person because he's a bit of a liar, and also I don't like his personality. He thinks I'm smarter than me. That also does not mean, though, that you rescind your vote or don't vote for a guy like that. When you talk about baseball, you're talking about Curt Schilling. We do this every single year with him. Like, oh, but the numbers are there. That guy has proven himself to be a racist troll. He is a terrible person, and not in the way that Aaron Rodgers is terrible, in the way that, like, he offends people everywhere he goes. And that, yes, should keep you out of what is considered one of the most infamous Hall of Fames in all of professional sports. It should keep you from Cooperstown, I'm sorry. But Aaron Rodgers, sort of lying to us, definitely lying to us about being vaccinated, should not prevent him from getting the MVP honors. Because the truth of the matter is, there's so many incentives that are rolled into these things. And if we start just cherry-picking who we like and don't like and not focus on their on-field play, it's a
Agreed.
Very slippery slope. It's slippery slope.
Yeah, I like how Al also just inducted the Baseball Hall of Fame into the Hall of Fame of Hall of Fames.
It is, right? Like, let's just be real.
It
Cooperstown is...
They do it the best.
Cooperstown. And then everybody else.
It's the most uppity of the Hall of Fame.
No, well, that's what I mean. That's what I mean. Like, so, again, I believe Barry Bonds should be a Hall of Famer. I believe that all of these guys were held out for PED reasons. Like, blah, 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 blah. Like, I hate character as this criteria because it gets to a debate that is unwinnable. And what's the point of any of these things? Actually, the point is to generate debates that are... by definition, not winnable.
Just so, come touche. To the NBA, where it takes touche. Like maybe 5 All-Star games.
Yeah, they're like, come on in, anybody.
Come on down.
The
entirety
of the Harlem Globetrotters. Come on in.
All right, guys, moving on.
Should we move on to talk about somebody else that we really like?
Yeah, from one junk scientist to another. What do you expect from Kyrie and his return tonight?
Oh, this show's a blast.
So Kyrie has missed 35 games. He is now the first part-time superstar in, I believe, sports history. The only superstar to ever be banned from his own home court. And he will be making his debut against the Indiana Pacers tonight. I'm expecting that he's going to be good. You know, I don't expect him to look creaky. I don't expect him to be bad. I expect Kyrie Irving to be not the best version of himself, but a version of himself that will justify the cold calculus that the Nets made, which is we're desperate. Like, we're not as good as we thought we were, and we need him. And I think like tonight will remind them that if you don't care about any of the convictions that you said you had the courage to hold at the beginning of the season, then yeah, basketball-wise, this would have been a wise move.
Let me start here. I always assume that Kyrie Irving is a fine-tuned basketball-playing machine. He is always ready to drop 50 on somebody. That stuff's never going away. I believe he was probably playing a ton of basketball all this time. He didn't just stop and, you know, study philosophy or anything like that. So I think he's going to be great. I think he's going to be typical Kyrie. And I think this is kind of, not to get on a tangent here, is kind of what I find sad about Kyrie is if he were just a basketball playing dude without all these other issues off the court, by far would be one of the top 75. By far would be, you know, top 5 point guard in people's minds. And like, he's that talented. And so for that reason, glad that he's back and hope to even if it's only road games, glad to see him. But, you know, I feel like not necessarily this was part of a plan for the Nets. It was part of a hope that, hey, there could be this slow play of, yeah, I know you don't like the regular season. I know you don't like mandates. So let's just kind of ease into this and see what happens. And the idea being that if he does play these road games, that there's going to be a point where he's going to want to play the home games, where he's going to recognize that, hey, you know, come the postseason, this isn't really going to work out for us. And, you know, having talked to Sean Marks without any the GM there, he didn't really say anything. You could just tell like about a month ago that he was just exasperated by it and really didn't know how to go about this. And this, I think, is a positive step for them just getting him back. And is it going to take some work from his teammates to convince him of maybe, you know, getting the shot and playing in home games? Are they going to say, hey, look, like, I'm fine. Absolutely nothing has changed in my body. Why don't you go ahead and join us here? And, you know, he could sort of justify it however he wants, saying, hey, I needed more time. I needed this. I wanted to settle other issues. And we're all going to accept him. And I think part of that is the growth process is knowing from the team, hey, you're right, Pablo, we do need him to win a championship. I think Kevin Durant can openly admit that. I think James Harden is not, you know, 35, 10, and 10 James Harden, but like once every 3 nights for this team. So I do believe they absolutely need him. And so hopefully this is sort of a marriage that's going to, you know, continue to improve and they can get him to be, you know, a full-time player.
This is such a gamble by the Nets. Like, when I was on SportsCenter when this news came down that they were going to let him be a part-time player, my first instinct was like, ah, you buckled. Like, no, you have kids, Pablo. Like, or you have a kid, Pablo. Yeah. You know this fight when your kid refuses and you're like, today is the day that we break you. Like, no, I can't acquiesce. And you feel so good, right, when you finally break your child. I know that sounds terrible, but if you have kids, you understand. And it felt like they gave in. I will say this, though, upon sort of further reflection and then hearing some of the comments as to why, it did make a little bit of sense to me, right? To Steve Nash's point, he's like, I mean, at the end of the day, like, we keep signing all these dudes. We've had a lot of COVID issues.
They're
like,
paying them for those road games.
Yeah, they're like, they're basically part-time players anyway. So why not have a part-time player who's actually one of the best basketball players in the world and is readily available to you? So I understand that aspect, but it's such a huge gamble because you all know, and then I think anyone watching knows for sure, they've heard the amount of times us throw out the numbers, how little these teams have played together. But I saw it again today, and the Nets have played 106 games since James Harden joined the team, okay? And the big three of Durant, Harden, and Kyrie have played 14 times together. They are 11-3, but their most recent game playing together was game one of last year's conference semis against the Bucks. So at the end of the day, like, we don't really know what the hell we're going to get. We don't. We have such a small sample size. And for the Nets, I understand why you need to take that gamble, but it is a huge gamble because if this, at the end of the day, doesn't help you in any way, if it doesn't solve the ills that you've been dealing with all season long, then you just look like some punks. You let Kyrie Irving punk you in the mouth. And I'm just interested to see if it all plays out.
Well, there is definitely a power dynamic here that is unique because the Brooklyn Nets, more than any other team in professional sports, as far as I can tell, are like a player-led small liberal arts college where the students get to sort of call the shots. Like, oh, we don't like to do formal practices. We're going to sit out on the grass and just talk about basketball, right? Oh, we don't like the rules that our teachers, that our administrators, that the dean has given us. We're going to change them. We want Kyrie back. Kevin Durant is clearly saying that behind the scenes. Therefore, he's coming back. The way this blows up, though, is when, Izzy, I mean, when the postseason starts and you have a guy missing during home games. Like, what if the Brooklyn Nets end up being, because Kyrie Irving is back, the one seed and he can't play in games
play to be the five seed or lower so that you can get more Kyrie, not more home games.
Ooh,
once
true.
It's been decided that he,
Izzy.
That's when we tank. We
How
go
did
to the
I
bottom
miss the
half.
That's
here,
good.
Yes.
You gotta tank.
Alabaster, are you in favor of this plan, or what are you interjecting
about?
Just
so you know, they're the two seed right now. So if you're, I don't know if I can expect Kyrie to help them tank, but I do have one thing to say, Izzy. In the spirit of embracing debatable, I'm shocked by the gall and the temerity of you putting Kyrie Irving as a top five point guard of all time. Can you defend that take when Stephen Curry, Magic Johnson, Oscar Robertson, Jerry West, Isaiah Thomas, Chris Paul,
top five ever?
Give me those five again, because I'll put them ahead of Oscar. I'll put them ahead of Isaiah in terms of, like, ask anybody in the league in terms of skill. Like, Kyrie is unmatched at that position. It's unbelievable. It's not just the handles. It's the finishing. It's the shooting. The guy was just I don't know how many hours he spent playing basketball, but it feels like he spends every hour of his waking day playing basketball, because that's how good he is and how talented he is. Go ask Andre Iguodala. Don't ask me. Ask Andre Iguodala.
Well, he spends his time doing basketball when he's not researching, of course, because
that's
he's
right.
an excellent researcher.
When he's not
well,
taking
blah, blah.
Classes at UT
sure,
University,
sure, 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 sure.
incidentally.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, listen, yeah, yeah. I feel like we just made progress in terms of putting Steph Curry ahead mm-hmm. of Isaiah. Like, that just kind of happened. And now, I'm reminded now, Alabaster, what are Izzy's other takes that we've had to debatable, undebatable?
Listen, we're just going to have to wait and see on Tua, okay? Let's
oh,
not
that's
just
right.
continue
no, it's
talking
Tua
about
oh,
that.
Oh, what's the Tua one?
Tua's a left-handed Drew Brees. That's right.
Potentially.
Oh, God.
Potentially a left-handed Drew Brees. All right. And who's to say a left-handed Drew Brees is going to be the same as a
Did
right-handed
Did you just pick
Drew
another
Nobody
little
does.
Quarterback to compare him to? Is that all you could come up with? Or
a little accurate quarterback. Yeah.
Go Russell.
Let's not forget also that Tyler Hero is essentially Devin Booker. But
all fair.
I mean, look True. At the numbers. Look True. At the numbers from their third year, I want to say. It's pretty close. It's yeah. pretty close.
Tyler Hero guys. Does have a song about him, so there it is.
I don't think we're getting MVP votes, guys. I don't think that segment got us MVP votes.
No.
You guys ready to play a game?
Please.
That game is What Are the Chances?
What are the chances you're going to have me sitting here defending Kyrie Irving for the rest of my life? Like, that's
That was a stunning turn.
I did not expect yeah. to be in this one. All right.
I'm going to drop on Sports Center tonight. I'm going to be like, Kyrie Irving, who Izzy Gutierrez has marked as a top five point guard in all time. I'm just going to throw that in and then just watch your mentions blow up. Sorry, Charlie.
Well, it's all good. We're just moving on to another junk scientist. What are the Great. Chances
Jesus
that Novak Christ. Djokovic plays in the
Oh,
NBA
my God. Course? What is happening? Oh,
so,
God.
What is happening is the real question here, because a lot has happened and changed as of, like, today, which is, I guess, tonight or last night in Australia. So basically, Novak got this exemption to play in the Australian Open from the actual tennis tournament itself. He had received an exemption, of course, because he is defiantly and famously unvaccinated. Australia, the country, has many issues relating to Mike Golic Jr.'s consumption of mayonnaise, but also has a very firm policy on mandating the COVID vaccine for everybody who enters and resides within the country. But now Djokovic has landed in Australia, but has the wrong sort of visa, apparently, which is a separate logistical concern. And that has now jeopardized the fact that maybe he can't even enter the country at all. So I'm going to put the percentage right now at like give me a
fluid.
Give me a 10% on that, Alabaster. Because I feel like Australia, the country, like, is very angry about this. And Australia, the country, seems to really have more courage of its convictions than, like, the United States at the moment as it results in this vaccine.
For sure. He's got, what, 9 Australian Open titles? So I'll put that at 9% then, because that's the only reason, like, the lure of Djokovic is the only reason he's going to possibly get excused or get this exemption. Can I read you this headline, or at least a tweet from the Daily Beast? It said, breaking, world number one tennis player Novak Djokovic has reportedly been refused entry to Australia following a national outpouring of rage over his vaccine mandate exemption. It's unclear what Djokovic can do to enter Australia. No, it's perfectly clear what he can do to enter Australia. It takes a couple seconds, a little poop poop, and then you're in. And you might feel a little shaky tomorrow, but I'm sure you'll be fine for the tournament. So it is interesting. Like, he had this exemption coming in, like coming over, but it wasn't the official one. It wasn't the one needed to get in the country. It was just to, I guess, to play in the tournament. So I guess the Australia's Tennis Federation is thinking, of course we want him. And the country's like, no, no, no. And so, yeah, I don't think he's going to like find a way. And I think he's way too proud to do anything other than just find the, you know, the exemption and play. I don't think he's going to get the shot, certainly not under pressure like that. And I don't think he's going to provide any physical, you know, evidence that he shouldn't be getting that vaccine. So I don't think there's a very good chance he's going to play at all. And I think that's, you know, that's a heck of a stand your ground situation for the country, because in terms of, like, you know, international athletes, like, he's got that connection with Australia, having won so many of those and being the greatest player of all time, supposedly. So, yeah, I think that's quite the stand to take.
Yeah, especially when, you know, he's a huge name and that's really what it's all about. You don't have as many big names as the Australian Open right now, so it would be a big chance to take. It's before the, you know, the enlightened people who know more about science than scientists, you also have to have vaccines to get into, like, Africa and many other countries, so miss me with that. Like, that's the mandate now. You got to have a vaccine to get into Australia, and he does not. Also Canada, and he does not. I'm going to put the chance at 15%. Though, just because I just feel like these things behind closed doors, there ends up being like someone saying something, and I just don't. I would give it higher if it was America. I'd make it like 50%. I'll give it 15%. I don't know. It just feels like this sort of reminds me of. I always have a story. I was at a club. I'm going to leave the names out, but I was at a club one time, and I was hosting, and I had my own section. Okay, and I invited a celebrity into the section. I knew that celebrity, and I was like, you can come in into my section. Well, that celebrity then invited another celebrity into my section, which was sort of annoying, but was fine, because it's like, whatever, it's a big section, and I had like one person with me, and it's fine. But then I left my section to go to the bathroom, and when I came back to my section, the security guard of the second celebrity that I didn't invite in stopped me and wouldn't let me come back to my own table. At which point I was like, oh, I will shut this whole motherfucker down. And I just went and got the club owner, who came over and kicked everybody out that bitch. So this sort of reminds me of that in no other way than I just wanted to humble brag that I had the ability to kick everybody.
Wait, Izzy, let's play the guess who. Let's plus the guess who game.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of friends, celebrities who are friends and always hang out together, and I couldn't really think of any.
You won't guess.
It's Atlanta. It's Atlanta, and random celebrities are just always like at these events, and so they're not necessarily. There's no connection, and you'll never guess. But I'll text the group chat, and you'll go. Interesting that they tried to pull a flex. Never.
Wasn't Jermaine Dupri.
Never. JD is a stand-up guy. Never. But, like, I just love that, like the tennis people were like, you know what? We got you, Novak. And then the government was like, hold up. We make the rules. You do not make the rules.
Yes.
You can all get out.
It reminds me of the Kyrie situation. Like, just with Kyrie being, you know, all about the people. And it's just like, you realize, like, you're doing this for the people, right? You're trying to keep them from getting ill and potentially worse. Like, this whole country has done this entire, like, strict lockdown situation so that they wouldn't be in this mess that we're in. And now it's just like, oh, tennis is more important. No, tennis is not more important. I don't care how good you are. And it's the same thing, you know, with Kyrie. It's like, you're doing this for the other people in the arena, for other people in the state, even if they don't know that it's for them, it's for them. So, like, if you're about, you know, being good to the people, then why don't you do it if it's not really going to hurt you? It's just going to hurt your pride.
So the owner of the club, the Australian government, in this metaphor now, what they are demanding from Novak Djokovic to enter the country, of course, is proof that there's a medical documented reason that he cannot be vaccinated. Right. So Aaron Rodgers also had alluded to this, that he has some sort of allergy to the mRNA vaccine, which is why he didn't get that. Novak Djokovic is actually being called on this alleged bluff, and they're saying, show us why you can't get it. And as somebody who remembers that Novak Djokovic had a coach in recent years who believed in telekinesis, you know, the ability to move objects with your mind. I'm a little skeptical on whether that documentation is coming. I'll put it that way. I feel like
I think Novak was just hoping
rigorous on the science.
He was just hoping to say, no, I've been anti-vax since way before COVID. Please let me in. As if this is sort of some sort of, you know, the standard of his. And he's like, no, I've been this guy for a long time. I'm going to go ahead and play.
He held a whole tennis tournament during the first year of the pandemic, real quick. He held a
pre-vaccine.
Whole tour, pre-vaccine, in like the summer of 2020, in which everyone got COVID. That's how...
And so did he.
Yes, that's how he did. That's how Nikola Jokic got it. Like, this is, he has a history of being remarkably not the guy you want to be running tournaments during pandemics.
Okay, here's
a
question.
Okay.
And it goes to both Kyrie and Novak. We know Kyrie was in health and safety protocol, so we assume he had COVID and can't get the shot for 90 days. We don't know if Novak had it recently. If either of them or both of them have, do you let Novak in that exemption because he can't get the shot and can't get the illness because he's, you know, got the antibodies? And same with Kyrie.
No,
do you let him play
still
at home?
His fault. No, because that's still their fault. Like, it's, they have had ample opportunity to do it. So I don't think you make an exception because at the last minute they decided, I guess I'll go ahead and get it. Now they can't because they had COVID. I don't think that makes any sense. You have to be consistent. I do wonder this, though. You mentioned, like, the pride thing. I wonder if these dudes... If some of these dudes, I actually believe some of these dudes really do stand by sort of like the YouTube viewing that they've looked at, and they're conspiracy theorists, and they just don't want to get it, and they believe that they're more enlightened than the rest of us. But I do think that some of these guys at this point have just walked down this path so far, they're like, oh God, like if we weren't outing people for being vaccinated or not, I wonder if the Kyries or the Novaks would have by now. But now they've sort of become the faces of anti-vaxxing, and their pride won't allow them to choose a different path. Like, I do wonder about some of these dudes, if that's not, you know, a reality, that maybe they would, if it was quiet and they didn't have to sort of express or admit that they finally got vaccinated, if they would.
Well, Elle, that's exactly why I want to take this moment to campaign for Andrew Wiggins, NBA All-Star. Because that dude truly, like, claps for Andrew Wiggins. You were one of those guys. You listened to people who said, even if you hate this, you don't believe in it, it's a good idea for all sorts of reasons, science, medicine, insert all that stuff here. And guess what? You've been awesome after that. You've been excellent. Yes. And I would love everybody to compliment the fact that once you do change your mind on this, you
it's
will
okay.
be welcomed with open arms. Yeah. Like, just get
That's
off this
Talk
dumb
about the
hill.
Pride thing, like... You're going to be embraced so hard if you get that shot, and your Nets fans are going to be like, yeah, we get to see you the rest of the season. We might bring a championship to Brooklyn, which starved for championship for who knows how many years. You will be embraced so hard that it's just like your pride's going to be like, okay, I'm good. Like, people love me now. This is amazing. So, yeah, I don't think you really need to sort of stand your ground and dig your feet in on that one.
Yeah. If it is about pride, which, again, they claim it is not, they believe, once again, that we are sheep. So, Alabaster. What's next?
All right, next one. What are the chances LeBron should be the full-time center of the Lakers?
God.
Why? What's so funny? That's not where he's waiting. The jump ball. We can just talk about the jump ball being the most useless thing in the world. Like, you're going to get the ball to start two quarters. You're going to get the ball whether you win the tip or not. The only tip that matters is the tip at the beginning of overtime, because there's just that one overtime, presumably.
Wow. So many. Look, they just want to see how it feels, Izzy. Why doesn't the tip matter?
It doesn't. You know what it matters is when you have like Yao Ming out there and somebody like Brian Grant says, I'm going to win this tip over that 7'6" guy. And he wins it and everybody feels good about it. But that lasts for about 3 seconds. So tip ball is nothing. Lakers do need to start LeBron at center. First of all, it saves Anthony Davis. It saves Anthony Davis from having to play the position. So everybody says, okay, he's not doing it. LeBron's doing it. And I think Frank Vogel's been trying to do this for a long time, but it takes the green light from either LeBron or AD. AD clearly not giving him the green light to play him at the five. LeBron says, go ahead, I'm the man.
So it's funny because I did a hit with Dave McMenamin about this on SportsCenter yesterday, and he talked about LeBron playing like center and playing different positions and how much he's enjoying the small ball. And so I looked at some of those numbers. Would you guess how many minutes he's played at center this season?
LeBron?
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
28.
That's 318 minutes.
Whoa!
Their point differential is plus 46. Their field goal percentage is 49%. Their three-point field goal percentage is 34%. Yeah. Now, in the last four games with him at center, exactly, with him at center in the last four games, he's played 129 minutes, still point differential up, plus 16, field goal percentage 51%, even better three-point field goal percentage than on the season. So the numbers bear, it's not the worst idea in the world.
I mean, clearly, Anthony Davis is out, which is why this is all happening. Anthony Davis, who is supposed to play center because everybody would benefit from that, doesn't want to play center. I'm for this. Give me that odds card, Alabaster. I'm going to pick a number here because I want to see this happen, right? Like LeBron James at center, like super small ball. Like it makes sense. I would like to give this 99%. Okay. I want this. Look, the Lakers season is already deeply weird. I want this to get as weird as possible.
How tall is LeBron? Is he 6'7 or 6'8?
Oh, I mean, if you believe the photos of him, like stand next to Dwight Howard. 6'9". Like, yeah, exactly.
Okay. So 69% is my, for that one single reason, is my percentage error. And I do, like I said, like you look at the roster and they don't really have a bunch of two-way players. They've got offensive specialists, they've got defensive specialists, and especially at the bigs. And so you put LeBron or, you know, in the future, AD there, like, it pretty much solves your issues. Like, A, there aren't going to be many teams that are going to say, oh, okay, we're going to post up Vucevic 20 times because LeBron's on him. No, A, because LeBron can do a pretty decent job defending him, and B, it's just not the way the game is played. Like, if you want to coerce another team to post up, a 6'9 LeBron James, you know, 20 times, go ahead. Feel free. It's going to mess up your game. We're probably going to be pretty successful at it, and, you know, you're going to lose in that scenario.
I think the most important question to ask is, does LeBron want to play center? And it seems like he does, because just a couple weeks ago, it was all about, we have no identity, we have no identity, and Alabaster just put it up. They used, 21 different lineups because of injuries and COVID and all that. Now, all of a sudden, what is he saying? I feel like we finally have an identity. I feel like we're figuring out who we are. He just seems to sort of be intimating that he likes what they're currently doing.
Can we celebrate for a moment? Because it seems like all social media, I saw a meme or a photo, I don't know what it is these days, an advertisement. It was just Russell Westbrook and the stat right in front of him in big, giant numbers. Zero turnovers.
Zero. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Russell Westbrook's perfect night. It's so sad. That's where we're at.
That should be the goal for him every season. Forget, 50% shooting, forget tennis. No, zero turnovers. You get zero turnovers in 20-plus minutes, the Lakers are probably going to win.
I think that was just an infographic, Izzy, but there should be a meme where they edit Russell Westbrook onto George Bush's body and a mission accomplished banner is hanging from the USS.
And then they should put a little thing on the corner describing, hey, this is what this is, an infographic, a meme, a photo. Just explain it in the corner for, graying people like myself.
Alabaster. Oh, Al didn't put a number down, Al. Where are you going?
Oh, I'll put it at 60% because I think it should be greater than a 50% chance. But, Izzy's still my favorite number, so 60.
Yeah, it's a veteran move by Izzy getting to 69.
It goes
first.
Like that, yeah.
I mean, I'll go with 96% if you want.
Just invert it. There we go.
There topic. It is.
Okay, or
well
put
done.
It upside down. Yep.
No kink shaming.
What are the chances that the Chargers and Raiders should play for a tie if the Jaguars upset the Colts?
Oh, that'd be dope, because they'd both get in.
Set this one up, Pablo.
So, okay, there is some sort of, mathematical situation where, this is all very, I'm confused, just look, this does not help me explain this. All
so,
I know
okay,
is
I
that...
Can, I think I can help explain this, that yes, like, it's the Raiders and the Chargers right now is a win and in for either team, right? Either whoever wins goes in. But if the Colts somehow spit the bit and end up losing and they tie, they would both actually be able to get in, right?
Yes, so...
And it will be decided out, yeah. So, they're division
the Jaguars...
rivals. They're not playing for a tie. And the Colts are not losing to the Jaguars. There is zero chance.
But if they were, they
should 100%,
if they
did,
dude. 100% Alabama. Like,
you'd want this?
Well, here's actually, you know what? Bring the card back so I can see the fine print on this before I consent to what we're doing. Okay. So Okay, I'll let you guys go first because I have a challenge to part of this premise, but you guys put your numbers down first because I'm thinking about.
Okay, well,
about
I'm
this.
A Denver Bronco fan. I don't want either one of them in the playoffs, so I'll say a 10% chance that they should play for a tie. I only say 10% because knowing these two teams, when it counts the most, they would actually play to a tie. So I'll say 10%.
Well, these are both, like, the Chargers are always playing for their life, like, in the last 2 minutes of a game. And if you were to tell them confidently, hey, we can eliminate that situation, it's not going to feel like life or death. You just relax. Just don't score. Nobody score. You're going to guarantee
just
yourself a
kneeling.
Playoff spot. Like, I think they'll take that trade-off. I mean, those two franchises, the Raiders and the Chargers, like, how many people had them in the playoffs this year? I guess some people had the Raiders, right? But their season has been epic, like the stuff of novels, epically bad in terms of just situations going on with Gruden and Ruggs. Yeah, and so, yeah, I would say there's like a 3% chance. Like, they're going to at least joke about it pregame. Like, when you see them laughing, when they're visiting with other coaches or whatever, there's going to be at least a little discussion of, listen, you guys don't score that first drive, maybe we won't score that first drive. You guys don't score that second drive, hey, maybe we got something going
on. Oh,
wait,
no, I'm not advocating for a 0-0 tie.
0-0.
No. 45-45 tie. I'm good with that.
I mean, there's so many other facts.
No one
like,
scores.
You got to trust your kickers in that situation.
While also playing for a manufactured tie. I love that. Let's
no,
all
pad
get
your
some
stats,
contract
but just kneel
guys.
At the one.
No, let's get some bonuses added on to our salaries this year one. While we're here. I think the answer, so the word is should, right? I would love to see if this, it should be 100%. I want to see, again, the most chaotic version of this. But here's the thing, Alabaster, and thank you for embodying my answer here. It should be 100%, but at the very last second, they should fake kneel. Okay. And whoever has the ball last should go and score.
Wins.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's
talk
0%
setting up a rivalry. The Chiefs
Raiders
rivalry will live forever if that happens. I also think though that if the Colts lose to the Jaguars, they should just automatically be eliminated and they do not deserve
100%.
To get to the final. So just like let's just call the game, call it a COVID default tie, and then boom, you don't have to blame the players, you just blame COVID. Hey, it was a tie.
Yeah, if they're not beating them by halftime, they should just go ahead, call the game, and tell the Colts they're not allowed to be in the postseason because you can't lose even for a single second to the Jaguars.
Mm. Quite the scenario though.
Alabaster. Oh, this is it.
Happen. They're division rivals. Oh, they hate each other. They would never help each other. Why would you want your division rival in the postseason with you?
But
that's
do they
insane.
Really hate each other? Like,
yes,
just because you're hired by a franchise, you don't, acquire all the hate
rival.
That comes with
it. And you know each
it.
Other too well, which means anything goes, which means you don't want them in the playoffs. Absolutely not. And they already have to deal with the Chiefs.
Does anybody really
AFC West.
Hate
it's
Justin
too
Herbert?
Too much AFC West. No.
I mean, what's there to hate? Oh, he's too tall. No, the only people who should hate Justin Herbert are Dolphins fans because they didn't get him.
Fair.
I mean, they got the left-handed Drew Brees. I mean,
yeah, of course. Well, I mean, that might not be a great thing.
No, I didn't know
thing.
You said that, Izzy, but I'm going to give you
I've said it multiple times, but apparently only Charlie remembers it.
Yeah. Look at on the bottom line during SportsCenter today, Al. Right alongside
Shouldn't
the
aim
names.
Shouldn't we
just
aim for Flutie? Right?
The celebrities.
Like, Vinny Testaverde, maybe?
One of the greatest of all time. That's
so
what we go by here in Miami.
Though.
You either have to be a Hall of Famer or nothing.
Happy New Year, Izzy.
Happy New Year.